Hi, guys. This is Joshua Palacios with the Toronto Blue Jays, and you're listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack. Hope you enjoy.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the Walk Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The diehard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, man. How about on your end?
Things are good.
Yeah, right?
That's about all I got.
Here we are. This is our second Friday podcast. We're starting to get in the swing of things. And I'm not going to lie, this may even surprise you a little bit. I'm kind of upbeat and optimistic about the Jays right now.
Okay, that's good.
Interesting.
I'm a little bit on the underside of okay with the Jays.
Yeah. Well, I saw last night's loss coming.
Okay.
A mile away.
Okay.
I saw it when I saw Kansas City on the schedule right after the Yankees.
You already had it penciled in as a loss.
I just feel like after coming back and winning two in a row from the Yankees, and now you're up in that Yankee series 4-2, you feel good about yourself. They wake up Thursday morning, add another pitcher to their injury list, right? Ross Stripling.
Right.
Going to the IL. They call up Anthony Kay. I don't know. It just seemed like a recipe for disaster. And then they kind of took that 7-0 get behind right away there yesterday.
Yeah.
And honestly, man, there were so many things that I felt positive about. Bo and Vladdy are the heartbeat of this team right now. And
yeah, they're thumping.
That's who you need to be the heartbeat of this team, right? Like, they are both killing it at the plate. Vlad's looked really good defensively. Bo is making some mistakes, but he's getting better.
Yeah.
Yesterday, Kevin Biggio had a terrible game at third base. He had a couple of errors. He wound up getting injured. It was up in the air what was going on.
So I missed yesterday's game. I was in the text chain hearing, well, there's another error, and there's another showing off that arm strength sarcastic comments.
Yeah.
So how bad was it, and what is the injury?
So the injury was, it was a bit of a cold day yesterday at Kauffman Stadium. He took a hard line drive off his bare fingers.
Okay.
That I don't even think they counted it as an error, but it was an error. He should have fielded it cleanly.
Okay.
He
tried to play it with his bare hand or what?
Yeah, it just ricocheted off the end of his finger is what it looked like.
Just took a weird bounce?
It came off his glove and then off his hand.
Okay.
He didn't field it cleanly. It was a little bit on him, but again, chillier day. I think it ricocheted in his hand a bit.
Right.
And at first, it was really tough to figure out what was going on because Montoya pulled him, put panic in, and after the way he had played third base through three games, it reminded me a little bit of back in 2019 with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. kind of fell apart at second base.
Right.
I'm going to say the yips, but we're knocking on wood and pretending like that's the only time I bring that up. But that's what it was feeling like yesterday.
Okay.
And so it was a little bit up in the air. Are they pulling Cavan? Because they just don't wish his confidence to completely blow up, which also is a ballsy thing to do on Montoya's part, right? To pull a guy mid game because of defensive errors, not showing a lot of confidence. So that didn't seem right. And then it over an inning or two kind of trickled out that, you know what? He hurt his finger. They're going to get it x-rayed. They did. They got it checked out and he's cleared. It's good to go. It's still sore. He might miss today. I don't know exactly what they're doing. Today's roster isn't out. I'm not sure if they shuffle things around and move Santiago Espinal up or if they just put Joe Panic in there and go with a short bench. We'll see what happens.
Short bench getting shorter, hey?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, man, I was looking at the injury list for every team in the major leagues right now, and if you think that the Jays are bad right now. I mean, honestly, go take a look at who's on the IL for Houston. Take a look at who's on the IL for Tampa Bay, for the San Diego Padres, for the Texas Rangers. These are teams that wish that they were in our boat for the injury bug.
Fair enough.
And I think we just got to limp through April. Like, that is the goal right now, is yes, our depth is being tested and it's being tested early on. Every team goes through this in a season.
Yeah, absolutely right.
This isn't like, let's write off 2021. This is, let's see what happens. And honestly, man, the Jays are sitting 6-7 right now. They looked really good against the Yankees in both their series. And yeah, they haven't looked great against the teams that they probably should be beating up on a little bit. But yesterday morning, I even tweeted. I was like, do not overlook the Royals. And that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
The Royals got good young starting core, just like the Toronto Blue Jays do. They've got great young starting pitching. I don't know. Again, I know that we're 13 games into the season, but if you look at who's first placed in the American League right now, the AL East is the Red Sox, the AL Central is Kansas City, and the AL West is Seattle. And I think all true baseball enthusiasts know that that is not how it's going to stay.
Yeah, it's a smoke and mirrors start early April kind of a situation. So, you mentioned, like, don't overlook Kansas City. This is something we did with the Rangers as well.
Yes.
Like, we play down to the competition. As much as it's wonderful to see that we're 4-2 against the Yankees, shout it from the mountaintops.
Yeah.
I love that. But, again, this is part of the reason why the Springer edition is nice, but I didn't want to spend our whole wad going out, getting a pitcher, you know, another ace or whatever, because this team isn't there yet.
They're not, and I think that mentally they could very well be there mid-season. I think they're still learning the ebbs and flows of a 162-game season. And yeah, it's apparent that when they're playing a team like the Angels or the Rangers, that they let down a little bit.
Yeah.
And you can't do that because these are still major league teams. These are still professional baseball players who can go in there and get the job done.
Yeah. Like, that's the difference between being a 100-win team and being an 85-team.
Game, like, 85. Exactly, man. It really is the difference. I'm not panicking yet, though.
No, there's no panic. It's just, it's frustrating, but there's no panic. You're right.
It's very frustrating. Let's talk injuries for a second because, like you said, when you look at the list, you start to go, whoo. And what's being hit right now is where the Blue Jays are the most vulnerable, which is their pitching. Okay, and I mean, if you look at the bullpen and who we've lost since the start of the season, it's all the back end of our bullpen guys.
Right.
Kirby Yates is gone for the season. He's already had his Tommy John surgery. Right? Julian Merriweather was just put on the IL a couple days ago. That's a huge hit to the Jays. He was looking so good. He had some hip discomfort. Turns out it's an oblique strain, similar to what Springer was going through earlier in the season.
Right.
As if that's not enough, one day after they put Julian Merriweather on the IL, the madman from Markham, Jordan Romano, right?
Yeah.
Right back on there too again. It was a what was the injury? I'm going to pronounce this wrong because that's what I do with pronouncing things. But the ulnar neuritis, and it's in his pitching arm, whatever it is. It's like a ligament thing.
Right. Ugh.
Not good. Tyler Chatwood. I mean, he's got inflammation in his tricep and his pitching arm. Same thing. All of these guys, there's no word on how long they're going to be on the IL. And this is a big hit. All four of those guys are who you look to in the 7th, 8th, 9th. That is who you're going to.
Yeah.
So what we're going to see now is we're going to see old Timothy Meza. He's going to be in some high-level spots all of a sudden. We're going to see Rafael Dolis as the closer on this team. He had some experience doing that last year. And Rafael Dolis is a guy that he gets better as the season goes on. He takes a little bit of time to warm up, but he's starting to get there. You're starting to see Rafael pitch like he did last year, and that is very important to happen. And then we're going to need some surprises, in all honesty. We're going to need some guys to step up and fill the void. And this is a really interesting situation for the Toronto Blue Jays right now because they do have some depth in the minor leagues, But what do you wish to do? Now, and I'm going to throw this out there. Is there maybe a starter or two in AA or AAA? Well, let's not get too excited and name names, but we all know who we're talking about here, right? And Simeon Woods Richardson and, yeah. and Alek Manoah.
Yeah.
Do you wish to bring them up, put them in the bullpen, give them some experience in the major leagues? It is definitely going to be less pressure putting them in the bullpen, kind of do what they did with Aaron Sanchez back in 2015 there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a route you wish to go, but things are starting to look thin. And how many guys do you just next man up before you're like, hey, we got to start trying to figure some stuff out here? Who knows? There's even some free agents still out there that maybe you go take some guys off the scrap heap and see what happens. Like, this is where we're at right now.
Yeah, it's, I mean, April 16th here. We're rapidly approaching the service time deadline, so.
It's true. Service, and I don't wish to talk about service time manipulation because I think, number one, I honestly do believe that that's going to be a major sticking point in this CBA that's coming up.
Right.
And so all of this service time manipulation stuff could be completely irrelevant in literally 9 months. So let's not get too much into it, but you are 100% right. Right now, if they wait until April 21st, they can bring up any of those guys that we just mentioned, and they
their save a year. Doesn't
start. Save a year. Exactly.
Oh, well, yeah, who do we... I mean, there's some obvious choices to bring up. We don't need to name names here because I don't want to jinx anybody.
No, for sure. And here is another thing that's really frustrating is the apparent choices to do what I just said. The guys that are starters that you'd love to see just stick in the bullpen are guys like Patrick Murphy, and he's out with an injury as well. And, yeah. You know, like, the guys that are on the precipice that are 26... and maybe you can afford to stick them in the bullpen and not push them as a starter.
Oh, they're not available. Boy. I can.
It's pretty wild.
Do we just weather the storm? Or, yeah, I don't know what the right answer is, Scott. I really don't.
I don't either. And
It'll be an interesting next week or two, I suppose.
I think it is going to be a very interesting next week or two. I like that our starters are where they're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we go Steven Matz today, and Matz has been a lost stopper. You know, like, when Ryu has had good outings and they still lost, Steven Matz has been there for this team to shut the door, and that's what they need him to do again today. I think today the Jays win. I think they hammer the Kansas City Royals mm-hmm. today. I think they come back after that loss yesterday. And what was beautiful about that loss is that, man, they made it a game right until the very last at bat. Like, going into the ninth, it was 7-5. Coming up to the plate was Josh Palacios, Danny Jansen, Marcus Semien, and everyone could feel it. The whole team was pushing to get Bo and Vladdy up to the plate. Right. That's what this team was pushing to do. Josh went in there, first pitch swinging. Buck and Tabby were a little upset about that. They figured he should have, pardon me, taken some pitches. I disagree. I think he saw the inside fastball. He thought he could get a hold of it. He popped it up. What do you do? They put Kirk in for Jansen. Single right away. Beauty. Love to see it. Marcus Semien takes a walk. Now we're one out, and we've got the heartbeat, like I said, of our team
right
up at the plate, man. We gave ourselves a win right to the very end. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, they allowed 3 unearned runs. It was a sloppy game defensively, and they probably could have won that game had they not just given up so many runs that they shouldn't have, because they did. There were mistakes that just cost them the game. But that said, right till the very end, right to the ninth inning, you know, and Bo Bichette was so close to hitting a home run in that at bat. And he was mad at himself. Like, this is how hot and how good Bichette is seeing this baseball right now at this point in the season. We're 3 weeks in and he is seeing everything. He knows when it's a strike. He knows when it's a fastball. He knows when to lay off. It has been impressive. And man, he was sitting on a breaking ball and he just missed it. And then popped up the next pitch. Like, again, you could just see he was in the dugout while Vladdy was at plate, and he was at the plate, and he was still just upset.
Hitting the water bottles.
Yeah. And then Vladdy, same thing. Vladdy had a great at-bat, yeah. Just didn't pull it off. But this is the thing with this team, is that they have the offense to make every game interesting.
Yeah.
And they just need to tighten up the defense, man. Like, I know this has been something we talked about for a year now. And it's frustrating to see them make these off-season moves and this still be a thorn in their paw type of thing, right? Like, but what do you do? This is another thing people forget, is this is Biggio's really first run at third base. And he looked good in the spring. He's had some decent games at third. He's just also had that learning curve that everyone hates to see in a new position. But what do? You can't skip how to learn third base. You know, like, you can't
just put him in right field until he figures out third base.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah, I mean, so how long of a leash do they give him? We've talked about this with guys like Rowdy who are struggling and stuff like that. What's the end with Biggio here?
Who else plays third base?
Absolutely, you nailed it. The answer we want to hear, but that's what it is, right?
You kind of need to give him...
The whole reason he's in there in the first place is as a favor to us, basically.
It really is the truth. His versatility has saved this team in many different times, on many different occasions. And I think part of the reason that Cavan is struggling at the dish so much is that when you slump defensively, sometimes it just carries over onto the offense. And it feels like a weight on your shoulders. And I mean, let's talk about getting some monkeys off this offense's back, because they have Rowdy Tellez. Yes. Was 0-for-21 going in to the start of this week. Like, when we talked on Tuesday, we were basically like, will Rowdy ever hit again? And now he looks good. He's 6-for-15 in his last 15 plate appearances. Right. He's hit a long bomb. He's looked good with pitch recognition, which is a huge thing for a hitter, yeah. Right? Is that if they're up there, like, that was the thing with Rowdy. He was flailing, like he couldn't tell the difference between a changeup and a curve and a fastball. You know, like, he just looked, his timing was just off.
Yeah. Well, and that's the difference with, I mean, if you look at the first 10 games of the season where Bo Bichette was swinging, how he was feeling up there and how Rowdy was feeling. Like you say, pitch recognition, Rowdy didn't even look close. He looked lost up there. Whereas Bo Bichette wasn't getting the results, but he looked like he knew what he was doing, and
exactly.
And it comes around. So, but and it's nice to see Rowdy looks good now.
This kind of goes to your question earlier of how much rope do you give him? You know, like, the whole reason that Rowdy Tellez is hitting right now is because Charlie kept sticking him out there.
Yeah.
Baseball is a game of slumps.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a game of mental toughness, too, right?
It really is a game of mental toughness, and it really is a game that you are who you are,
mm-hmm.
Right? Eventually, it just all evens out, and you are who you are. And Charlie looked at Tellez and thought, we have seen him over 180 game stint. We know what he can do, mm-hmm. when he's seeing the ball well. We need a big left-handed bat. We're gonna keep throwing him out there, and he's contributed to this team in the last couple games in big ways.
Yeah.
Alejandro Kirk went 0-for-13 to start the season. Everyone started to get a little worried about it. I know even I was on that.
No, we had that talk, I mean, too, about, like, how long does he stay on the big club and how long until we see a guy like Riley Adams instead.
Exactly. Like, and since that chat, he's had 3 singles and a home run.
Yeah.
And he's looked good. And he had that pinch hit single yesterday.
And he needed his bat to come alive a little more than Rowdy did. Rowdy's got the longer leash because, like you said, over a larger sample size, we've seen it out of Rowdy.
Exactly.
Very small sample size with Alejandro Kirk. So it's nice to see his bat come alive.
So this offense is heating up. I mean, Marcus Semien is a guy that I'm waiting on a little bit. He's hitting the long ball.
Yeah, he is. He's a strikeout or home run kind of guy right now.
He has been this year so far. His average typically is better than we're seeing right now. I think we will see him improve. He's hitting about 200 right now. I mean, I'd be shocked if that's where he's at all year. I don't think that's a thing that's going to happen.
No.
Lourdes Gurriel is another guy that he's starting to look good at the plate, man. He had four really good at bats yesterday, a couple singles, a walk. He's starting to see the ball. And when Lourdes gets hot, and it's funny. I spend too much time on Blue Jays Twitter because I get myself all worked up sometimes with bad takes. And, this week I was seeing stuff from Jays fans that were like, we need a new left fielder. We need Lourdes should be on the bench right now. It's like, you not remember last year? Like, I don't understand these guys that have already proven themselves, and then they go on a bit of a slump, and everyone's like, next! Like,
well, I know. I mean, there was people last year that were calling to trade Vladdy.
I know!
Let's trade him before he loses all of his value altogether! Like,
that's a really good point, man.
It's absurd.
It's absurd. Like, and this is... Man, I'm guilty of it too. After experiencing that 60-game season, it was just such it screws with your brain as a baseball fan, because baseball is not meant to be taken in a 60-game
No, stint. It's certainly not. I'm glad we're back
to a full. It's meant to be taken at 162 games. It's meant to be the long game. It's meant to be a battle of attrition. It's meant to be a mental toughness thing. You know, like... It's one of those games that, yeah, this isn't a sprint. It's a long distance run. And to have these knee jerk reactions April 16th, like, let's be reasonable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, honestly, do you see any big transactions in the Blue Jays' futures? Do you think they're going to pull a trigger on something, or do you think it is going to just be a look within kind of a mentality?
I think that it's going to be a look within type of mentality. That said, knocking on wood, if we see one of our starting pitchers go down, and when I say one of them, I mean Mats or Ryu, yeah, we may be in panic mode, quickly try and find someone out there.
Yeah.
That's a possibility, but personally, I think until this team... is at the trade deadline, we're going to see no additions from outside of this organization. In fact, I think it's more likely we see them push a guy that maybe is fringe ready.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we see Joey Murray in May. You know, this is the type of move I think the Jays will make. I don't think they're going to go out there and get a major starting pitching acquisition or a bullpen guy. I don't see it happening.
I don't see it either. I mean, the two guys you mentioned, knock on wood. I mean, if we lose Ryu, what's even the point at that point? Right? Like, it's over.
I don't want to overreact, but you're really...
Like,
you're right, man. Like,
I don't know. We're playing for stats at that point. I don't know what to say. Like,
you definitely need a guy you don't see stepping up, step up. Steven Matz would need to continue to do what he has done for the last two games all season. And then you'd also need to see Robbie Ray be... you'd need to see guys playing way above their career averages.
Yeah.
You just need to see that. I don't think this team is at a position right now where they could take injury to Hinjin Ryu. We shouldn't even be talking about
this. No. Let's move on. Let's just cut this right out of the podcast, because if God forbid anything happens today, we're taking this episode right down. I tell you that.
Yeah.
Because we're going to get blamed.
We're just poking the baseball gods here.
Okay. So realistically, though, as far as call-ups from within, I don't know if it's going to be Joey Murray. Obviously, friend of the show. We have some love for Joey Murray. But I think he deserves it. He's like we said before, you know, he led the entire organization in strikeouts in 2019. He has that off the chart spin rate. You know,
yes.
Currently, he has some command issues, and I think that's, by his own admission, the number one thing that he needs to work on. Right. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think that is the kind of minor league prospect that we're likely to see, as opposed to a Alek Manoah and as opposed to a Simeon Woods Richardson. Because I think,
agree 100%, dude.
I think those guys are 200, 300, $400 million contract guys. Mm-hmm. Like, that's their ceiling. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we want to mess around with that. Like, regardless of what happens with service time manipulation, I just think that if we're going to burn a year of free agency on a guy or this or that or whatever, yeah, it's a guy that's, you know, going to be an $80 million contract guy if all things work out. And I don't think that... I just think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see a non-sexy guy who's having a good spring or a good appearance at the alternate site or whatever.
I think one thing to keep in mind, everyone, too, is that minor league ball isn't going right now. You know, so like when we're in this scenario where guys are going down, we're calling dudes up from the alternate site.
Right.
They're not in game shape.
Practice facility, basically.
Anthony K was called up yesterday last minute, and it was great that he was stretched out and he was ready to pitch. And he had some bad luck. I'm not going to lie. He allowed 5 runs in 4 innings, and 3 of those really weren't his fault. That said, I mean, there's still 5 earned runs in 4 innings. This is a guy who hadn't pitched in a game since 2020.
Right.
And this is who we're talking about for calling guys up. And that's why it is more likely that if we're in a pinch, we're going to see a guy like Joey Murray, a guy who has pitched 2 professional ball players for years, right? A guy with some experience under his belt. Has he gone to the majors yet? No. But I would rather see him get his major league debut than, let's say, a Simeon Woods Richardson.
Yeah.
And I think Richardson is one of our starters of the future. I think he's a number three or a number two guy in this rotation in as early as 2 years.
Yeah.
But do you rush that up? Do you rush a kid who has never even played above low A ball, and Alek Manoah, high A ball? Like, this is where they last pitched in games. No, I don't think you do.
I think what it comes down to is whether we lose 4-1 or 15-2, a loss is a loss. So if we don't feel like bringing Simeon Woods Richardson up is going to make the difference between winning and losing, then why bother?
It's very true.
Right? Like, if he's going to be hit around, let's just put Tanner Roark back out there. Honestly.
Yeah, which is what they did yesterday.
So, can we move on from this depressing topic?
Yeah,
you started this whole show with, man, I'm feeling good about the Blue Jays.
I know we went down the rabbit hole with injuries, and of course that's going to be a bummer of a topic. But I truly do like where the Jays are right now. I know they're 6-7. They're not quite 500. I think they're going to be fine. I really do believe that this next month is about weathering the storm. If come May 15, this team is sitting around 500, I'm happy, man.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I'm happy.
Okay.
Let's get through this injury fiasco, I guess we can call it.
No, I think that's great. Temper expectations. You know, we're going to be getting guys back, whether that's in the form of arms or in the form of bats. We're getting guys back, right? So,
exactly. And you know what, man? Where there is subtraction, there is opportunity. We talked about this a little bit on Tuesday.
Right.
Before we throw to him, I do wish to quickly touch on Josh Palacios, because he is having a heck of an MLB debut. He is hitting pretty close to 400. He has looked great at the plate with his bat, and I don't mean power. He's not the typical Blue Jays bat in this lineup. He's given a little bit of diversity to what this offense offers. He hits the ball all over the field.
Mm-hmm.
He takes what the pitchers give him. He's not trying to hit a home run. He's trying to get on base. He's trying to move the lineup over. And that is a mentality that this team has lacked, and I love to see it.
Absolutely.
And we touched on this on Tuesday, too. There is a scenario in which Josh sticks with this team.
Yeah.
I do not think that Jonathan Davis's job is safe. I think that once Teoscar comes back, which is still another week and a half, a decision will be made on who has performed best. And I think it really will be a performance-based thing.
I think so, too.
And I think it's great that Palacios has stepped up and continued his hot spring, which is exactly what this team needed. So
absolutely,
that is a great bright spot.
This is true.
All right, my man, before we throw to Josh here, we had a great little conversation with him about 10 days ago, I think it was. Honestly, we talked to Josh
just before he got called up.
Just before he got called up, like literally a few days before he was called up. So it's a great conversation. You get a really good look at his mental approach to the game and just how he kind of stayed game ready. Like when we were talking to him, right, he was just going to the alternate site, but he was still very excited. And he's like, you know what? I know that I had a great spring, and I know that it would have been nice to break with the team, but I think my opportunity is going to come. And of course it did. So that's great.
Yep. Ready when opportunity knocks. All right, my man,
before we do that, I did wish to touch on one little piece of news from the major leagues.
Okay.
That isn't Blue Jays related. And it's just a feel good story that Yadier Molina, of course, catching legend with the St. Louis Cardinals, he caught in his 2000th game with the Cardinals yesterday night, and he is the first catcher in Major League Baseball history to ever catch 2000 games with one team.
That's crazy.
What a special accomplishment.
No kidding. Wow.
We're talking a guy that's been in the league almost two decades.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, and when people think of Yadi, you think of the Cardinals and the Cardinal way.
Yep.
He's helped been the backbone of that franchise for almost 20 years. Super impressive. So we'll leave it at that. Big congrats to Yadi. Go Blue Jays.
Go Blue Jays.
Enjoy Josh Palacios. Cheers, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Runner goes, trying to steal third, and that one is belted to left center field, and that baby's gone.
Hi, guys. This is Joshua Palacios with the Toronto Blue Jays, and you're listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack. Hope you enjoy.
So thrilled to be joined today by outfielder for the Toronto Blue Jays organization, Josh Palacios. Welcome to the Walk Off, my man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man. Excited to be on.
Yeah, first off, congratulations on one heck of a spring training, my man. You turned some heads.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. Put in some work, so I'm glad everything worked out.
How was the spring training experience this year? Was everyone having as much fun in the clubhouse as it looked?
I thought it was a blast this year. Obviously, we have COVID protocols. Things are a little different than usual. But the guys, the core group of guys that we got here is amazing. From the guys that came in and back up to the starters every day, the guys in the league, everybody is just open. Everybody kind of has a feel for each other, knows each other. And it's an amazing environment, man. I enjoy going to the park every day.
That's great.
As a fan, that was one really fun thing about this spring training was realizing how much depth this team has. It is just loaded front to back. And I know you just finished playing the last game of spring training yesterday, and you're right there. You know, I mean, it seems like when it comes to outfield depth, you're kind of the next guy up. How are you feeling about 2021? You must be in that so close you can taste it kind of mentality.
Yeah, we're close. We're very close now. I'm excited. Just waiting on my opportunity. Whenever an opportunity comes, I'll be ready. But the team, we have a wonderful team this year, and I'm just excited. I hope I get at some point a chance to contribute, help this team win some games in any way I can, because it's a lot of fun up there. It's a lot of fun.
Well, that's the right mentality to have, absolutely. And obviously, everyone develops at their own speed. That's not a baseball thing. That's just kind of a life thing, right? Yeah, I know, I'm a comedian, and I found out very quickly, comparing yourself to others is a surefire way to just drive yourself crazy.
Drive yourself right into the ground.
Right into the ground, right? Success and opportunities, they kind of present themselves if you just keep working on getting better and not really worrying about what everyone else is doing. And I know you've played with a bunch of the guys on this big league team throughout your minor league career. Is that a mental hurdle that you've ever had to overcome, or have you always been pretty focused at continuing to work on you and only the things you can control?
Yeah, the one thing that I've been really working, especially with the mental coaches for a couple of years now, is controlling what I can control. But I've kind of used it as more of like a stepping stone, because playing with these guys, knowing these guys, these are my boys, Bo, Biggio, Vlad, Lourdes, like I've known a bunch of these guys, I've played with them. Seeing them make it kind of gives you some more hope and inspiration. Like, man, these are my boys. I play with them. They're up there. It's possible. Like, you see it happen. It's like, hey, these things are possible. These things are definitely possible.
That's awesome. So you're not starstruck at all then when you're at the big league camp,
eh? It's hard to be starstruck because I was living with Bo in the offseason.
That's so cool.
In the big league camp. It's just my boy. I know them from when they signed.
That's amazing.
Speaking of the mental side of the game, I did want to just touch on this a little, because it is one thing about baseball that is always so impressive to me, and it's that, and it is unique to baseball in that slumps are just like a huge part of the game. And obviously there's slumps in every sport, but baseball, it doesn't seem to matter if you're a superstar or a utility player. Mm-hmm. There's just so many mechanics in a swing that if you're just a little off, it can take some time and adjustments to get it back on track. Is there a slump that you went through in your professional career to this point that kind of stands out in your mind? What did you learn from it, and how do you approach slumps at this point in your career?
Oh, yeah. I've had two major slumps. But the one that stuck out to me the most was when I was in high A, I was raking, doing everything right. It's like nothing I could do was wrong. And then my girlfriend and my best friend came down to see me. And the day they arrived, it sent me, it's not their fault, but it sent me into a spiral. So something went wrong, and I went into like a 28 at bat, like 80% strikeout. My girl's first time watching me play pro ball in real life. And my boy and I'm just striking out left and right. I could not hit a ball to save my life. The ball just started disappearing to me. It was an invisible baseball. And I just couldn't do anything right at the time. But one thing I did learn is how I go about what I'm doing. Getting hits is kind of out of my control. Those things, I can't control that. All I can control is what pitch I'm swinging at, what's my mindset when I get in the box, and just trying to square that baseball up. So that slump definitely showed me, like, hey, we're not going to chase some of these results that everybody else chases. We're going to bring it back to what's the process, what can I control, and then give myself the best opportunity to present myself with getting a hit.
Man, do I ever relate to that. It's funny what the brain does, right? You're just something you do all the time, and then all of a sudden you almost want to like validate all the work that you've been putting into something. Like, I always hate when my family is in the audience when I'm performing. Yes. And even though, you know, like they just want to be there to support and stuff, I'm like, oh man, I better be getting laughs, or they're going to be like, what is this guy doing, right?
Yeah, man, you start letting all those extra things get in there, and then you end up striking out 80% of the time.
Yeah. Oh, the brain is a funny thing, eh? So you, my man, you're a very experienced pro ball player at this point. You're 5 years in, and I'm sure at times it's been tough. What would you say the most valuable experience or biggest lesson you've kind of taken away from the grind that is being a minor league ball player over the last half decade?
I'd say two things. One, learning how to save your money. That's number one. Minor league grind, you've got to learn how to live off the minimum possible that you can experience. Like, whatever the lowest you can spend is, you got to learn how to live off of that. Yeah. So now I know going forth, I'm going to be able to save my money real well. I've got a lot of tricks now. I know what I'm doing. And the second thing would be going back to what we're talking about, trusting in the process, not looking up, not constantly looking at the scoreboard. When you're looking up, looking at the scoreboard or playing that comparison game, it could almost feel like, hey, man, I don't have a shot. I may never make it. Look at all these things that have to go right. And when you put your head down, you focus and you pay attention and grind on what you can control. When you look up, or every time some things may come up and you glance, you realize like, whoa, I'm moving a lot farther than I thought I'd ever be moving, or farther than I thought I was at the moment. So one of the best things you can do is just put your head down and grind.
I know it's always talked about the finances in minor league baseball. When you first started in low A, was it a little eye-opening to you, even though you'd heard all about it?
When you first experience it, it opens your eyes. It does. It does. My uncle and my dad both played pro ball. They told me about the minor league grind and the bus rides and everything. And I'm like, yeah. And after a while, your dad and your uncle just telling you stories. But as time grew on, like, wow, I'm really in this thing. And you start looking at that bank account, and it's not going up very much, and it's going down really quickly. It's like, oh, man, we're going to have to change a few things about how we're living now.
It must be pretty cool to kind of go through all that and now get to the point where I'm sure you spent that time in big league spring training this year, and you're like, hey, we're pretty well looked after here.
Oh, yeah. It's always nice when the numbers go up. When those numbers go up, everything's a little more comfortable. You relax a little more. Eat a little better.
So, my man, have you always hit left-handed, or is that something that maybe like your dad or your uncle, as you were younger, were like, you should try swinging left?
No, it's actually the opposite. Everybody tried to get me to hit righty, and I was just a natural lefty. Made no sense to most of them. The only theory they've got is my great uncle threw lefty and hit righty. So maybe there's something in there. But I was a switch hitter when I was growing up because everybody thought, like, hey, you're supposed to be able to hit right, so hit right. Yeah. And then after a while, I gave it up and decided, you know what, if I can hit lefty on lefty, I might as well just stay here. It's a little easier.
Well, it's funny what a big deal baseball does make of that lefty-righty splits. Yeah. Do you prefer hitting a right-handed pitcher?
Honestly, I have no preference. And at some points, I won't lie, I'd rather hit a lefty. It's almost like you have to do more things right to hit the lefty. So you give yourself less room for error, and you've kind of locking in a little more.
When's the last time you hit from the other side of the plate?
Oh, we're talking senior year in high school. I was switch hitting. Quick story, twisted my ankle, couldn't hit righty, so I decided just to hit lefty. And then I realized, like, wow, all right, it's a lot easier to just stay on this left side against both these guys. So I just stuck it out.
Just to concentrate on the one thing, eh?
It made things a lot easier.
Do you ever think about it when you're slumping? You go, man, maybe I'll just try from the other side.
Oh, now you think about everything. I've been thinking about staying there with the middle. The guy's hitting in the middle. I've definitely seen some lefties where I've been like, yeah, I should be hitting at the right side right now. It'd be a lot easier to hit off the right side. There's every once in a while you got the guy throwing 100 like that lefty right. For the Phillies. Where you're like, yeah, I'd rather be hit on the right side of the plate. Right
yeah. Now. How satisfying, I've always wondered this, when you go up to the plate and mm-hmm. the opposing manager pulls the pitcher and brings in a lefty to face you, how satisfying is it when you just get a hit anyways?
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing when they go get the lefty because it's like, hey, at some points I'm like, thank you, you just did me a favor. I'd rather hit over this guy. So when you get that hit and you break all the baseball stereotypes and everything, the manager's pissed. It's a great feeling because you did everything you could to try to get me out. You thought about it, but you still couldn't do it.
It's funny how regimented baseball is with that, eh? It's like, mm-hmm. if there's a stereotype in baseball, we stick to it. Even if the numbers don't necessarily look that way, we're doing it.
That is facts. Now you could be hitting 400 against a lefty and then, all right, bring in the lefty specialist.
Yeah. So let's go back 5 years here. You were drafted in the fourth round in 2016 by the Blue Jays. What was that experience like, my man? And did you know that the Jays were going to take you?
Nah, I didn't. They were not one of the teams that I was like that were on the profile. The draft works in some ways. Like for me, it worked the morning of the second day of the draft. You get a bunch of calls from teams like, hey, would you sign for this? Or hey, would you sign for that? Or you get a text like, hey, third round this money, would you sign for this? And Blue Jays weren't in any of those discussions. So I was assuming maybe the Marlins, maybe the Phillies, maybe the Tigers. I talked through with a couple of teams, and then all of a sudden I got a phone call. Like the Blue Jay scout that I had met rang on my phone, and I kind of knew what it was about, picked it up. And he said, hey, this is what the offer is. This is the fourth round. Will you take it? And I was like, yeah, let's go. But yeah, it was probably one of the last teams I was thinking about because I hadn't had much communication with them.
How exciting was that for you? You must have been losing your mind a little bit, eh? Putting that much effort in as a high schooler, and then all of a sudden it actually happens.
Oh, it was amazing, but it was also like a 50-50 because I got high standards to live up to because my dad and my uncle both played pro ball.
Yeah.
So it was like, yeah, we did it for a second, and then my uncle looked at me and was like, all right, but you're still at the bottom of the barrel. You got a long way to go now.
Yeah.
So kind of put that in perspective. But it was an amazing feeling to be able to chase my dream and not have to worry about anything else but baseball was kind of a relief. But the end goal was always the major league.
Did you consider going the college route, or did you, once you got drafted in the fourth, you were like, you know what, let's go for it?
I technically got drafted out of college in the fourth
round. Oh, perfect.
So I did go to college, yeah.
You already were doing the college route. Yeah. That's right. My apologies there, yeah.
It's all good.
So it's been fun to watch you, especially the last like 10 days, man. You've been flashing the leather out in right field. Yeah. How much time do you spend working on that end of your game? Like, is it kind of a 50-50 split, defense and hitting, or does it depend on what you're struggling on or what's going on? Like, what is your routine on that sort of thing?
I've learned to make it a 50-50 split. Having Devon White out there, the guy won 7 gold gloves. He's one of the best to ever do it. So having spent time with him in the alt site last year and him breaking down like what it actually means to be an elite defender, what's the little ambiances of being a great defender and the little things that even regular people don't notice that great defenders do, I realized, like, hey, I need to spend a lot more time on this because there's a lot of things I didn't know that you could even do out here. So after that, I realized that, hey, 50-50 split, whatever I put into hitting has got to be put into defense as well.
What was some stuff that he brought up? Like, I mean, number one, just to talk to Devo White would be incredible, but to pick his brain on the defensive side of the game, a side of the game that is almost overlooked by all the fans, right? It if you do it well, it just looks like you're doing it effortlessly, and I know that's not the case.
Uh-huh, yes. It's a lot of effort, it's a lot of intensity going into there, and not to give away Devo's secrets, he got some secrets in there, but he told me things about being a better outfielder by balls around the wall. Little things that we see as fans, like, oh, he just made a great play. No, this is actually a part of your defensive game that you work on, like catching balls by the wall, being able to make adjustments on those line drives that are at your head that you want to read if they're going over your head or they're going to be under and you're going to have to make a diving play in. Learning how to read the ball off the bat was actually a huge, like, helped me tremendously, because when you read the ball off the bat, you get a better read and then you can have a little room for error and know where you're trying to go.
Right. I guess it does help just with getting a jump on where things are, right?
Yes. And then the main one that I never even thought about was learning how to take your head off the ball while you run to it. Something I never thought. As a kid, you see the ball, you run as hard as you can, you just watch it and hope you get there. Devo actually brought about, like, hey, you take your head off the ball while it's hit and you get an understanding of where it's going, you get there a lot faster. But it's also pretty hard to be comfortable, like, not looking at the ball.
You got to find it again.
Running full speed toward, look up, got to find it again, then make the catch. But that's helped tremendously.
So cool. That's so interesting, man. It's funny because, like, one of the biggest assets in your game currently is the fact that you are very defensively versatile, right? Like, you can play all three outfield positions, which is huge. I mean, versatility has become literally one of the most important things in today's game. But, like, you don't have to look further than the Blue Jays for this. It's crazy. Yes. Like, every single guy on that roster can play two or three positions.
Easily.
To the point where it almost, again, to go back to the fans' perspective, it almost seems like anyone should be able to move anywhere, which is not the case at all. Even let's talk about the outfield for a second, right? Because it is easy for people to look at it and go left field, right field, center field. The outfield's the outfield. That is not the case. Mm-hmm. How much work is it to learn all three positions in the outfield? And how difficult is it to move around mid-game? Let's say you're playing center and all of a sudden there's a guy brought out in the late innings and now they shift you to left. What is that like mentally to deal with?
The best metaphor I give people who play video games is, like, if you're in right field, you're playing video games with one controller, and then you go to left field and you're playing video games with the controller backwards. All the moves are exactly the opposite. Oh, you got to run backwards, move backwards, your reads are backwards. So it seems easy when you're looking, but every position has its own ambiance. The reads has its own ambiance. There's a lot of little things in there, but the reads all change because you have a different perspective. So, like, right to left, you literally go into the exact opposites of the spectrum. Your reads are going to be completely backwards. And then center field, you got a little more time to read, but there's a lot more that you got to pay attention to because you got to make sure all your guys are in position. If you got to make sure you can cover more ground. You got to make sure you know where all the throws are and you're letting everybody know where the throws need to be going. So there's so much. Like, it seems easy, like you said, effortless, but it takes a lot of effort. These guys are working real hard to be able to play multiple positions.
I can imagine even little things like how when you're playing center field, you know, you're kind of the captain out there and you're kind of, you know, guiding guys and taking charge. And then to, let's say, move to right mid game or something like that, even just to like get out of that mentality. And now you're playing right field must be tricky.
Yeah, it gets tricky. It gets tricky, especially with the hitters. You're seeing the ball from a different view. And then also, the captain of center field, they call, like, if he's calling you off, you've got to understand where you're at, what you're doing. And then one of the biggest things that people don't realize when they first go to the outfield, the bounce around positions, your perspective of where the ball is going is completely changed when you move. So you move to right, and you'll see guys that are brand new in right field, they hit a ball dead center, and they'll be running full speed thinking that ball's to them, and it's in dead center. Or vice versa, they hit a ball to right center, and the guy's kind of jogging like, oh, that's the center fielder's ball, but you don't really know where you are in the outfield.
And nothing looks worse than that sort of error, too.
Oh, yeah. When you're out there just, this is center fielder. He got that. Next thing you know, the ball drops and everybody's looking at you. You're like, oh, man.
What the hell? Yeah.
Everybody's mad at you.
Do you have a preference for outfield positions?
I actually don't. I like all three. Each one of them has their own challenges. And I look forward to each one of those challenges every time I go out there. So I'm a guy, I like to challenge myself. So when I get out there, like the little to know that I have to do this a little better than this and this a little better than this when I'm moving around, this is a fun thing for me.
That's great. I know you did mention Devo. And I know also to name one coach or one teammate that has helped you in your career is going to be impossible, as with any industry, right? You accumulate knowledge from all sorts of people. But have you ever had one of those like aha moments where someone kind of shows you something and it just instantly improves your game and you're like, wow, I should have thought of this tweak or this adjustment sooner?
I would say I've had some aha moments, but the aha moments don't always last as long as you would like them to. So in terms of aha moments, I've had a couple in the outfield with Devo kind of teaching me about the turn of my head. It changed my game over like a course of 6 months. At the moment, it wasn't like, whoa. But after 6 months, you see like, dang, I could do a lot more things that I couldn't do before. And now on the hitting side, I have to shout out Dante Bichette and my boy Hunter Mentz. Both of them bringing some hitting perspective things. I have some secrets in there, so I won't shout them out. But bringing some things mentally in there, like, hey, if you do this in practice or if you focus on this in practice, this will get you this result that you've been looking for. And at first, you got to buy in, like, wow, that sounds like it makes sense. But it's always easier said than done. And then after you practice it and you kind of get the feel for it, it's like, whoa, this is taking my game to another level. Like, all these problems I had before, just completely let go of them now.
I love that you bring him up because Dante is a guy that just his name gets brought up all the time throughout that Blue Jays organization. And it doesn't matter whether it's the big league team or whether it's any of the affiliates, like he just gets brought up. What is it about his approach? Like, obviously, it's not just the knowledge he's imparting. He must have an ability to connect with guys that just is head and shoulders above some others.
Yeah, number one, he's been there, done that. So he likes to say, it's like Thomas Edison, I've failed thousands of times, so I can tell you everywhere you're not supposed to do it. And we connect with that because we've done it the way you're not supposed to do it plenty of times. So we're able to enjoy that, and he also makes hitting really, really simple. He simplifies it down so that it's not such a complex theory that you have to think and figure out. It just makes sense. Like he says, if you do this and you do this, you get this result. And it kind of takes away all the extra clutter and stuff that we put in our mind to make everything so complicated. Just takes that away. It's like, hey, do this and this, you get this result.
Simplifying it is interesting, especially in a time in baseball where analytics is like the king. Everyone just is so worried about what the stats are saying. Are you an analytics guy? Obviously, information is a good thing as a hitter, but like you just said, sometimes just staying within yourself and keeping it simple is the way to go too. How do you view analytics?
I view it as more of a reference point. So kind of to reference where my process is at. So like if this is my thought process, if this is what I'm working on in the cage, if this is what I'm working on in the game, the analytics will show me the results I'm getting from that. I don't look at kind of a forward back. So I say, hey, when I'm doing this, this, and this, this is the result I get. Now, I want to change that. I'll change what I do in the cage. I'll change what I'm thinking about. I change what I'm trying here, and then I'll get a different result on the analytical side. So kind of getting a reference to like, okay, where are my results? What's happening? What's going about? How's it going about? But you can definitely get lost in the numbers. If you dwell too much in the numbers, you can get lost pretty easily, pretty easily.
That's interesting to hear that literally paying too much attention to the numbers can just mess with your timing and stuff like that. Like,
yes, because the numbers are essentially a result of what you're doing in the cage, in my mind at least, and in Dante's mind. It's a result of what you're doing in your work in the cage, and your work on BP, and your work in the game. So if you focus too much on the result, you kind of lose what got you that result, or what could get you that result.
So I do want to talk about the fact you are from a baseball family. I know you brought up your dad and your uncle played professional ball. I know your brother just got drafted by the Cleveland Indians this year, which is very, very cool. And I know the Blue Jays in general are all about bloodlines.
Yes,
they are. Right? From a family standpoint, I mean, the baseball talks must just get to the point where they're dominating everything, right? Like, are there ever times at family dinner where, like, let's say your mom is like, enough?
Oh, come on. It's automatic. My mom's enough. My mom's like, yo, can you please get some hits so your dad stops bothering me? She calls in the ESPN analyst. It'll be like, I have a good day. She's like, all right, thank you. I appreciate the peace and quiet. And then I have a bad day. She's like, come on, John. I need you to get some hits. I'm tired of this already.
I can't handle your father when you're in a slump.
Yeah, I can't handle this anymore. Come on, get some hits. Give me a break, please.
Oh, that's great. You're a Brooklyn boy, correct?
Yes.
Now, obviously, us Jays fans will forgive you for no matter what your answer is here. But you were obviously a Yankees fan growing up, or what?
Yeah, long ago, back in the day, I was a Yankees fan growing up. Long time ago.
But you know better now.
I know better now. I learned the ways. That was before they tried to get me out when I was standing at home plate. Yeah. That changed a lot of things for me there.
That was before you had to face Gerrit Cole, yeah.
Yeah, before I had to face any of those guys. Before they were trying to get me to retire. I was a fan.
So, the reason you got into baseball, like, was it because you were just like, oh my God, my dad's playing baseball. Like, it's just such a big part of the family. Was that one of the things that pushed you towards it?
Yeah, it was like a family business. I don't know. I can't even remember when I didn't like baseball. It was just automatic. I was born. I think there was a bat and a ball put in my hand. And the good thing was I enjoyed it. So I just ran with it. And I've loved it ever since I was, as far as I can remember.
Last year must have been such a mind twist for you, eh? Like, it must have been the first time where you kind of go to spring training and then they're like, all right, everybody go home and we don't know when it's coming back.
Yeah, to be a part of that, like to be part of those discussions and everything was kind of crazy. It's going to be stories I tell my grandkids and stuff. Like, I was like, whoa, I knew at some point we were living through history. We were in camp and they brought up the coronavirus and what could be and how we could protect ourselves. And then 2 weeks later, it's like, all right, guys, everybody, we're going home. It's a global pandemic right now, and we don't know what's going to happen. It was kind of crazy to experience all that. And just to know that baseball was gone, sports was gone in general, it was a serious situation.
Yeah. Pandemics suck is not a lesson I needed to learn. I could have just read that in a book, you know?
If I could, yeah. If that could be the alternative, I would have done so. Definitely done so.
Well, I know that they tried to save that year of development in any way they could with the minor league guys. I know that you were at the alternate site. I know we talked to a few guys who were, and kind of they even were. I know when we talked to Jordan Groshans, he brought up how impressed he was at how much development he actually felt like he made at a site where there weren't really competitive games being played, right? How did you feel about your experience there?
I'm going to be completely honest here. I think that was one of the best things that could ever happen to my career in that experience there. We got kind of, you could take all the performance aspects out of what you were doing. Of course, they tracked them, but we kind of took them all out and we focused on, hey, what do you need in order to get better? And whatever that was, you could attack that every day. So if you want to steal bases, you could go to first base for 6 innings and just try to steal the base until you got thrown out. And then even you can keep getting thrown out over and over and over again until you figure something out. At the plate, you get 4, 5, 6, 7 at-bats, and if you're working on something, you could fail until you figured it out, which is an aspect that's not always welcome in the minor leagues because you got the numbers accompanying them.
Right.
And then defensively as well, you kind of felt free to try some things that you weren't comfortable with before, like, because you knew if you failed, there was no consequences. Yeah, like taking my eye off the ball. First time I did it, I was about 15 feet away from the ball and it dropped. Wouldn't have done that in a minor league game. But doing it at the outside, it was like, all right, coach knows what I'm working on. He's not going to kill me right now. And then eventually you get better at it.
So you could kind of focus on specializing on a few things, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could really lock in on exactly what you wanted to work on, because if all went wrong, it was like, hey, I know all these guys. These are all my teammates. Nobody's mad because nobody's stats are getting messed up. So everybody's, all right, we know what he's working on to the next thing.
Right, right. You're not hurting some pitcher's ERA because you took your eye off the ball to try something new.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I lost you there for a second. Oh, I'm back now.
I just said you're not hurting some pitcher's ERA because you took your eye off the ball to try something new.
Yeah, I do that in a regular game. The pitcher might be like, hey, what's going on, big guy? You just gave up 3 runs.
Yeah.
Was there a point throughout your baseball career, and you can even go as far back as high school or whatever, where you kind of realized, you know what, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can play pro ball. Maybe I can even go all the way to the majors. Or have you always kind of had obviously you've got to have a belief in yourself right from the get-go. But have there been moments where you're like, shit, I actually can do this?
Yeah, from off the rip, my goal was always to be a major league baseball player. And then I had my dad and my uncle tell me, hey, this is possible. This is the route. But then there was times senior in high school was like, hey, I really think I have a shot at this, having scouts and everybody come in. And then after going to the SEC, playing against like one of the best competition, college competition, and doing really well, I was like, hey, I've got a shot to go to the next level. And then it kind of happens once a year where you get to a new level and the talk is always like, hey, this is a new level, so there's new opportunities and new things, and the competition level is going to be much higher than what you recently experienced. And then you have a little success at that level, or the game slows down for you at that level, and you're like, hey, I can handle this. Like, even though we're going up, I know I can handle this. So every year that happens, like once a year where things slow down, it's like, hey, I can do this.
It must be a nice validating feeling when all that work you've kind of put in comes to fruition, and let's say you get bumped up to AAA or bumped up to AA, and you do have that moment where, hey, the game slows down and now it's just baseball again.
Yes, it's an amazing feeling. Kind of gives you the idea, hey, just trust in what you're doing, because it's possible. Even though there's new levels, more competition, guys are getting better, the core essence of what you've got and what you're doing is enough for where you want to go.
Number one, Josh, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us here. It's been really cool over the last, I think I mentioned to you there that like, we've had our listeners request us to try and get you on almost as much as anyone. I mean, you're no Austin Martin yet, but you're right up there. And I have a pile of listener questions here for you. Are you good on time? Do you have a few more minutes?
Yeah, I got some time.
All right. Okay, so your first question is from Lisa in Vancouver, and she says, Josh, I'm so excited you're on the show. It's been so cool watching you have such a great spring training. I actually saw you play in Vancouver as a member of the Canadiens back in 2016. How did you like Vancouver?
Vancouver was amazing, man. Vancouver was amazing. The 10,000, like 10,000, 5 to 10,000 fans a night. The city is amazing. I'm a city boy, so being able to go around the city of Vancouver, explore that, the different cultures and the food and everything there, and the fans there are like nowhere else that I've been able to play in my professional career. Like, we'll be down 10 runs, and you'll hit a line drive in the gap, and you'll be stretching it for a triple, and everybody's cheering, like if the game is 10-10 and you're about to win the game. I was like, yeah, this place is amazing. So in terms of my minor league career, I think that's the most fun I've had playing baseball was at Vancouver. I love that place.
That's incredible. Was that your first time in Canada?
Yeah, that was my first time in Canada, first time experiencing Canadian fans. I think hockey really gets you guys, like your fandom to another level. Because it's over there in Vancouver, you hit a line drive and everybody's on their feet cheering like, let's go, baby. It's not like that in a lot of other places. And I love that. I love the energy.
Have you, speaking of, we'll get back to the listeners' questions in a second here. Have you been to Toronto?
I've been to Toronto once for 3 days. I was able to go to FanFest in 2019, and it was pretty cool. I didn't get to experience the city much because we were at the park all day.
Yeah.
But the little bit of the city I was able to experience was really nice. Got to go to a Raptors game. That was pretty sick.
Oh, that's
the fans
cool.
Also were extremely excited. There was a lot of energy, and I love energy, man. I love that. And then the city, as far as I was able to go around, it looked a lot like New York City in terms, but cleaner. And there was a lot of multicultural food and essence and stuff like that. So I'm interested in going around exploring that.
So Lewis in Toronto here is your next question. And he says, hey, Josh, congrats on an awesome spring. What are you listening to these days? And are you ever the DJ in the clubhouse, or do you kind of let other guys take the reins?
Oh, thanks, Lou. And I'm a young buck, so I let the rest of the guys take the reins for right now.
Yeah.
But right now, shout out my peoples in Brooklyn. I listen to some Pop Smoke, some Chef G, Lecrae, KB. I've got a lot of guys. Jay-Z on the list.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch going down. But Pop Smoke is my favorite artist. RIP to the guy. I'm so I was disappointed when they killed him, but I love me some Pop Smoke.
So Darren in Victoria, so that's Vancouver Island. That's just the ferry ride across the way there. He says, hey, Josh, do you have any superstitions or weird routines you follow? It seems like every ball player has something.
No, I don't really have any superstitions. The only thing I do routinely is I try to get my waves right before the game. So I'll get my brush. I'll get my do-rag on. I'll put it on for about 15, 20 minutes. Let the hair sit down, get the waves going, and then I make sure my hair is ready for the game, and then we're ready for the game.
Once your hair's ready, it's time to hit.
Yes, it's time to hit. We are ready to go.
That's great. You got your priorities in order. I love that.
So Brett in Toronto asks, what is your favorite ballpark snack, Josh?
Ooh, favorite ballpark snack. It had to be sunflower seeds. Everybody loves sunflower
seeds.
Yeah, classic. I love me some sunflower, barbecue ranch, or some bacon. Dang, it's been so long that I haven't had them in like a year and a half now that I think about it because of COVID.
You can't be
but yeah, up. Sunflower seeds, baby.
Okay, so Jen asks, when it comes to your walk-off song, how do you choose it? Is it your favorite song, or are you trying to pump up the crowd?
It's usually something that gets me going personally. So I've always had a theme, a trend. I love Brooklyn, and my people's from there, so I always put a Brooklyn artist on my song. So always at least be Brooklyn, New York artist, but it'll be something that gets me going, gets my mind right before I go up to hit.
All right, and your last question is from Jason in Edmonton. So Edmonton's in Alberta, just above Montana. And Jason asks, he says, what is your favorite thing to accomplish in baseball? Is it a home run? Is it a triple? Is it running out? Anyways, you kind of get, he's all over the place here, but you get what he's asking.
A lot of people were surprised when I say this. The triple is my favorite play in a game of baseball. Hitting that ball, when you take off and you touch first base, and it's that in-between of, am I trying to go three here or am I not? And that excitement of when you cut second base, and you're like, man, I might get hosed doing this, but I'm going anyway, is my favorite play easily. Yeah. Just let, you can let it all, you hit the ball well, run in the gap, and you can run for your life until you get to third.
There's something about that, eh? Hitting that like third gear, rounding second, and you're like, all right, I'm literally going as fast as I possibly can right now.
Uh-huh. Like, yeah, you get the adrenaline pumping. It's either I'm going to get hosed right now, or we're going to make this look good with a slide.
That's interesting you said that, because I know we've had that question a few times for guys, and triple is the thing that gets brought up the most. And I think it's just like the last guy we asked, he never played in the major, was Michael Krause. And he's a Canadian guy. He plays on the national team. He's gone all the way to AAA. You know, like he's played pro ball for 10 years. And he just kind of put it like, I get more home runs than I do triples, and I don't have power. So he's like, it's like, of course it's exciting.
Oh, yeah. It's not many triples these days. Everybody stops at second, but I'm going to start a petition. Keep going to third. Keep get some protests third. And signs.
That's amazing, Josh. Honestly, again, we cannot thank you enough for taking the time to chat with us. All the best to you in 2021. And we look forward to bugging you when you get called up to the big league team to come on and tell us about it.
Well, I'll be excited to come back in that case. Thanks, bro. I appreciate both you guys having me on here. It's been amazing. Josh. Fun experience.
Awesome. Thanks so much, my man.
Thanks for listening to The Walk-Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack. Join us for a new episode next Monday. Oh!